Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here and we're looking at the night sky. And once again, I've got Kay with me. Have a word, Kay.
Hi everybody.
Right, okay. Well, there's been some interesting things happening, but before we get on, we'll have a few things to discuss. Stonehenge is open Wednesday through to Sunday. So today's actually one of my days off. We're open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's when you can just come out and we give you a map and you travel around the henge and you can just check things out. But in addition to that, we do guided tours when you get me take you on a special tour into the past to understand these ancient technologies and so on. And in addition to that, we also in the evenings do Star Treks. And with that, what we do is a bit of an introduction, but then what we do is take you around the night sky, picking out the bright stars and so on, so you can begin to find your way, navigate around the night sky, but also the importance that these stars had to our ancestors in the past. But we also look at them as they are actual physical objects themselves. So that's a Star Trek that we run. But both the guided tours and the Star Treks have to be booked. Okay. Anyway, looking to the south and a lovely evening sky, the Milky Way, you can see it standing almost upright near the south. And the first thing, of course, we always look at is the Southern Cross, and there it is there. And we always identify the Southern Cross, remember, because it's followed around the sky by the two pointer stars. And there they are. They point to the Southern Cross. The brightest of the two pointer stars, of course, is very important because it is Alpha Centauri, which is the nearest star beyond the solar system. So when we're talking about that big step of moving beyond our solar system to other worlds, Alpha Centauri will be the one, the first we will be looking at. But unlike our sun, it's our system, it's not a single star. Alpha Centauri's got twin suns orbiting around each other. But anyway, we'll have a closer look at Alpha Centauri at a later date. And then down towards the south, we've got the two Magellanic Clouds. They look like, to the eye, just two detached portions of the Milky Way. But they're in fact satellite galaxies orbiting around our galaxy. Turning around to the north, we've got some of the most spectacular regions of the Milky Way overhead, then coming down towards the north. And the big bright stars I'll identify first of all. We've got Arcturus and Vega. And immediately, you actually, just with the unaided eye, you could begin to see the difference in colours and stars. See, normally, we've got two different cells in our eyes, rods and cones. The cones give us coloured vision, and rods give us black and white. But the rods are the most sensitive. So when the light level gets low, we're only using the rods. That's why at night, all the beautiful colours that you could see in the daytime disappear. This is particularly with stars. Looking at a star normally, there's not enough light coming to trigger your cone cells. This all changes, of course, when you look through a telescope and you discover that stars are all different colours. They're reds, oranges, yellows, blues, and so on and so forth. Right? But the very brightest of the stars, Arcturus and Vega, them, you can begin to pick up their colour just with the unaided eye. And you find that Arcturus is a yellowy-orange star, and indeed, it is a red giant. We'll have a look at that later in another programme. And Vega, on the other hand, is a white-hot star. Right? So those are the two bright stars you can see there. And then above Vega, we've got Altair. Dead easy to pick. You've got this bright star with a star at either side to it. It's a nearby star as well. And then finally, right overhead, the bright star Antares. And of course, Antares is in fact the heart of the scorpion. Right? But a scorpion is dead easy to pick. It wraps itself around the brightest region of the Milky Way. Anyway, I thought that we'd spend the bulk of our time today talking about Oumuamua. And the reason for that is that for the first time ever, humans have actually observed an object entering the solar system from interstellar space, from beyond the solar system. All right. Now, this occurred in 2017, which is 9 years ago. So why am I bringing this up? Well, scientists have discovered this, and they've discovered lots of other things, but there's been very little discussion or information going out to the public for reasons which you'll see in a moment, okay? But it's come to light again recently where observations being done. And it, for me, is perhaps the most interesting object we can think of in our sky. So let's have a look at Oumuamua. Let's have a look. Okay, it was observed, first of all, by the Pan-STARRS Space Telescope. And its name actually comes from Hawaii. It's a Hawaiian origin. It means a messenger from afar, arriving first. That's a bit confusing, isn't it? A messenger from afar, arriving first. Okay, so this is Oumuamua. Yeah. And at the time of observation, the object was about 85 times the Earth-Moon distance and was heading away from the Sun. So, and this being an asteroid or whatever it is, it's small, so extremely faint, right? So it's moving away. Okay, so that's all interesting, right? But however, by observing it, they're able to work out the orbit of this object. And we know that it came not along the plane of the solar system. You see, the planets all orbit around the equator of the Sun. So the solar system is like a large flattened system. And that's what we see in diagrams. This thing was coming at right angles to the plane of the solar system. It came down between the orbit of Mercury, which is the closest planet to the Sun, and the Sun, went underneath and then came up again in between the orbits of Earth and Mars, and then started heading back out into space again. Right? So this fact on its own tends to suggest, hey, this is not something different. It's not part and parcel of the solar system. Well, so what was this thing that came through? It's vague interest at the moment. Was it? It could have been one of two things, either a comet or an asteroid. A comet is an icy body, right, which comes from the outer regions of the solar system. And there are two zones where these things come from. One is called the Kuiper Belt, and that is beyond the orbit of the planets. It's this big disk. It's a bit like a ring around the Sun, consisting of thousands and thousands, if not millions, of icy bodies all orbiting around. So this is the ring around the Sun. But every now and again, due to collisions and other things, one of these gets dislodged and then will fall in towards the inner part of the solar system. And that's when we see a comet. Of course, initially, it's only a small object, but as it gets closer to the Sun, its outer layers tend to get vaporized. So it begins to glow. And then the solar wind, the gas emanating from the Sun, blasts the material backwards, forming a tail. So this is the important thing about a comet. Its tail always points away from the Sun, irrespective of the direction it's going. So often you see a photograph of a comet with its tail, and you think, oh, the comet's behind it. That's what we see on Earth, but it's not. Its direction will be...
You need to have more information.
That's right, yeah.
Or it could be travelling. It's travelling a... It's blowing it away from the Sun. But its tail might not be indicating it to our normal, everyday looking at it.
Now, the Kuiper Belt, its size, it's from between 30 and 50 astronomical units. Now, an astronomical unit is a unit of measurement used by astronomy. It's the distance between the Earth and the Sun. So when I say 30 astronomical units, it's 30 times the distance between the Earth and the Sun. So between 30 and 50. So it's well out there, just beyond the orbits of Neptune and so on. Okay, so that's the Kuiper Belt. That's one of them, but in fact, surrounding the entire system is what we call the Oort cloud. This is circular. The outer edges of the Kuiper Belt tend to link into it, right? And this runs between 2,000 and 100,000 astronomical units. That's almost 2 light years away. So that's how big the solar system is. And again, on occasions, an object will fall in from the Oort cloud. Now, the difference is, of course, when something comes from the Kuiper belt, it's going to come along the plane of the solar system.
Well, close to it. Pluto there is not exactly on the plane, is it?
No. Well, an Oort cloud object, on the other hand, can come from any direction. And incidentally, the Pluto, of course, and many astronomers now believe is not a...
Not a planet, not the same as the others.
It's just a big icy body from the Kuiper belt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those are the two possibilities, all right? Now, and I just pulled up a photograph of the comet McNaught, all right? And you can see that beautiful tail on the comet, all right? So what about this other object that we're looking at, the tail of this other object? If it's an icy body coming from the Oort cloud or something, it should have a tail. First of all, we couldn't see a tail at all. And when we did see a tail, right, I just put a diagram of it showing its motion, we'd expect if it was an icy body like a comet, the tail would point away from the sun, right? The same as a... No. What happened was the other way round. As it was leaving the solar system and going outwards, its tail was behind it. So it tells us its tail has got nothing to do with the solar wind. This looks more like an exhaust.
Mm.
Yeah, so here's some weird and wonderful things occurring with this thing.
And can I point out there that some of these images of the actual object, they look different because they're based on the information they have, and it really depends how the light's reflected off it and things like that. And don't forget, it was already moving away. Some distance.
Also, this thing is so far away and small that it's a dimensionless point of light. So when we show an image like the thing there, the rest is done is artistic. Oh, this is a big lump of rock or ice.
Mm. So you get different versions depending who's or which AI is drawing the picture.
That's right, yeah. Okay. Well, that's one possibility. Well, if it was a comet, well, it should have tails, and but it's not obeying any of those principles. So the other question is, maybe it's made of rock, you know, and it comes from the asteroid belt. And as you can see in the diagram there, the asteroid belt again lays between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter. And it's a zone of vast numbers of rocks. We're not quite sure where the arguments go, whether it's actually a relic of a planet that never formed, or in fact is a relic of two planets that collided long, long ago. However, when they actually managed to measure this thing, they came up with these astounding discoveries.
How could they measure it now when they couldn't measure it in 2000 and... 17 or whatever when it came through?
Well, they were measuring it all the time, but the thing is, it's rotating. We now know it's rotating. Right?
Have we got better telescopes now?
Yes, I think we have.
That are capable of seeing a lot better.
Well, that's right, yeah.
Mm.
Now, the amazing thing was that this object has a width to length ratio of 1 to 10. So, taking its distance, it's approximately 400 metres long, a half a kilometre long, and 40 metres wide. So it's a big cigar-shaped object, right? But the thing is, we've never ever seen anything like that before. In when we look at asteroids and or comet bodies, the biggest ratio we ever get is 3 to 1. Anything bigger than that appears to be so unstable, it would break up. So the question is, looking at this thing, how on earth did this thing form like that in the first place? And how did it maintain itself when its actual shape is completely unstable?
That looks like it's made of rock. Is that artist's impression?
It is. Because remember, we can't see it. It's too far away. So we're assuming it's a rocky object, so... It's drawn up as a big rock, as it were, a big long rock. But the interesting thing was, from looking at the object and with spectroscopes and so on, where they analyse its material, there seems to be a lot of metal there as well.
Is there a lot of nickel?
I'm not quite sure exactly.
I think there is a lot of nickel in this one, and nickel tends to be a product of manufactured, in our world, a product of manufacturing. Mm. When you're manufacturing various steel-like objects, you know, I'm not saying steel. Somebody will know the perfect recipe for steel and I'll be wrong. But when you're doing, making things that go out into space, it's evidently quite a large component.
Now you can begin to see now why this thing has become more and more interesting. Right? So scientists cannot explain, I just put it out, scientists cannot explain how such an elongated object could form and how it could have enough strength to hold itself together in one long piece. It's going against the laws of physics, this thing.
It's come a very long way, hasn't it?
Oh, yes.
This is, they put a eye in front of, there's three objects now that they think are interstellar, not interplanetary, but interstellar. In other words, they have come very, very long distances, are extremely old.
Hmm. Well, is it an asteroid then? Is it a comet? Or metallic? There's some indications there that there's metal there, right? Hmm. And of course, metal would explain how it could hold together, right? And bonding it. So we've already mentioned earlier that all the details that are shown in pictures of this object, all artistic renderations, right?
But mind you, if they showed it like a spaceship, that would be an artistic rendering as well.
Anyway, Harvard astronomy professor Avi Loeb suggests that it could be alien technology. And, of course, that's what you think we've been suggesting right from the beginning.
The important thing is the could.
Yeah.
He is a brave man. He's standing on his own largely.
Yes, and this is why a lot of astronomy, if you start talking about aliens and things like that, well, it's in the realm of, oh, we better not talk about this, is get into UFOs and things like that. But this is a professor who came out and said, hey.
He's a very, very prestigious man.
It could be alien technology, because alien technology would explain all the fundamental things we observe.
Yeah, he's not saying it is. Whenever there's a new discovery of any sort, and this may not be quite what we think it is, but when there is a new discovery, there's a tremendous resistance. You know, something that is very, not just surprising, but extremely different requires very, very profound evidence, put it that way.
That's right, yeah. Mm. And again, this picture I brought up is a picture I put together. But wouldn't it be wonderful if the thing was close enough that we could actually see and photograph what it was? What would we see there, you know? This is just a bit of experiment. Also, it explains also if the direction it's moving in, the gas that we can see, which is going in the wrong direction, that can be explained, that it's actually the exhaust of this object we're actually seeing.
And what about the speed of the object?
Yes, the other thing is, on occasion it appears to be accelerating.
It was accelerating away from the sun, wasn't it?
That's right. And you see, when something is moving away from the sun, it tends to slow down because the gravity is slowing it down. But this thing is accelerating.
Sun's got a lot of gravitational force.
The only way you can do that is with an engine, right? So that's what I mean.
So far as we know.
Also, what we've also discovered, it's rotating. So it's got this long sausage-like thing, and it's rotating on its axis every 8 hours.
Well, what would be the advantage of having your spaceship rotate if it is a spaceship?
Well, it's exactly what human beings talk about doing and what you might see in science and fiction films, because rotating creates a false gravity. So either end of that thing, what you've got is... because of the rotation, you've got gravity. So if you're a creature that comes from a planet, the living creatures will be either end, where they can actually walk around instead of floating around.
It'd also be quite useful for machinery in it, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't tend to
be. But again, here we're seeing something that doesn't appear natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. And this professor went on to say, thinking that we are unique and special and privileged is arrogant.
Yeah, when you consider the numbers of how many civilizations have to be out there.
Yeah. The correct approach, he said, is to be modest and say, we're nothing special. There are lots of other cultures out there and we just need to find them. In other words, when we're looking out there into space, there's vast numbers of probably worlds and possibly civilizations. And it also goes on to say the discovery of intelligent life beyond our world could be the most transformative event in entire human history.
And this may not have been the first one that came through like this. It's just that we didn't have the technology to spot them. Remember, this one was found when it was well and truly on the way out.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody spotted it on the way in.
No. And that's it. So was this thing that came past an alien spacecraft from a world beyond the solar system?
We know it's really different. That's what we do know.
Yeah. And for a leading professor to turn up and say, hey, this is it, because the only way they can explain all the things that we can see on it is that it's artificial. It's not a natural thing. And then, of course, the problem is that when scientists decide to collectively ignore evidence suggesting that a visitation has already occurred. And I said the reason for that is UFOs and things like that have created so much, what can you call it in the science community?
So much of it has just been fiction, yeah.
Yes, it's fiction, and they don't want to be associated with fictional ideas.
Well, they are correct that you should have very amazing evidence to support an amazing claim.
Yeah.
Right. So they try to find any natural explanation. For instance, the speed going away could be that the thing collected some deposits of gas and which were in icy form through interstellar space, and then they outgassed and caused with the heat of the sun and caused it to move. But that, you know, if the thing is long like that, why isn't that the same all over it? Or why isn't it, they're saying it's closer to the sun, which kind of makes sense and accelerates it. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to think of any alternative explanation before you just settle for one. But it is looking like the one that people didn't want to accept,
We have to deal with, when we talk about life, it's life a natural process. Now, I'm stepping out of religion. Science says that life originated on Earth is a natural process. Therefore, the science of that will tell us
is anywhere life all out over
in the
place.
Universe where the conditions are correct, life will evolve.
Yeah, it's not necessarily like ours. It's not necessarily evolved to the sort of standard of ours, depending on the conditions. And there's always that possibility that life gets to a certain stage and then eliminates itself.
And then when you look out at those stars that we can see, each of those is a sun. We look at looking a little tiny piece of the universe there. Each of those is a distant sun. Orbiting around them are worlds. Now, that used to be a theory, and recently we now know of thousands of worlds. Our technology has got that we can detect them. There are more stars in the known universe than there are grains of sand on all the beaches of the world.
And we really can only look at things in terms of interstellar space are pretty close.
And we've got also, if that thing was in fact artificial, it's come from a civilization that is more advanced than we are.
But it set off a very, very long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very long time ago if it was sent from a world
If it was 50 light, if the cult's 50 light years away, it's going to be 50 years before they know about us. All right?
So, yeah. I mean, to it's probably, yeah. One thinks it's a long way away.
When you look at life on Earth, it's so magical and so on. It makes you wonder all the wonderful things that we're going to see out there. I've got a little tiny audio visual. See if it was. It's called The Edge of Stability, looking at our world and the wonderful things that it actually creates.
Here we go.
a beautiful world we live in, eh? And also, it also shows you the differences that we can see simply by looking at things in a different time frame. Well, that's all we have time for today. So we will catch you up in the near future. And remember, come out and see us at Stonehenge. Hi, folks.